And welcome to Backstage Pass, a spinoff of the Rock and Roll Survivors podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. I'm Kristen, and I'll be talking with music writers, podcasters, photographers, promoters, groupies, and so many others who love rock and roll. So here's your Backstage Pass. Let's get started. I am back on Backstage Pass with Lori Kay, author of Confessions of a Rock and Roll Name Dropper, My Life Leading Up to John Lennon's Last Interview. It is a remarkable read. It is a total page turner, as I keep saying. And on the last episode, Lori, I brought up the fact that you have interviewed three of the Beatles, George, Paul, and John, and that you reminded me that you also interviewed George Martin. But give me the order and how these interviews transpired.
Well, George Harrison was the first interview, and he was back in December of 78, and it was about a month after he married Olivia, and it was just a couple months after they'd had their child, Danny, which was really exciting, and he was wonderful to interview. And then in June of 79 was the London interview with Paul and Linda McCartney and their latest lineup of Wings. And then in January of 80 was my incredible interview with George Martin, the producer. And that was so great because he'd just come out with this incredible bio called All You Need Is Ears, which is not only a wonderful book, but told his whole story and all about the Beatles. And he had heard my special that I wrote and co-produced, RKO Presents the Beatles from Liverpool to Legend. And he was so complimentary, and he was just wonderful and autographed his book for me beautifully. And it was thrilling. And then in December of that same year, of course, was the interview at the Dakota, New York, with John and Yoko.
I don't know if I'm making up too much of a straight line here, so tell me if you think that I'm off. But it does seem like it started with George, which led you to Paul and Linda, which led you to George, which led you to John and Yoko. I mean, these people, I'm not necessarily saying they picked up the phone and called each other, but I think you were in a certain world now within these people of trust, or am I casting too much onto it?
No, I think you're right. And the thing is that even before the George Harrison interview, which actually took place for a show I was writing called Top 100 of the 70s, and also to make the Beatles special bigger, because now we had new George Harrison quotes to use. But I was able to do that because we had done the Beatles special. So, and I'd done a lot of interviews for that too, not with the Beatles, first off, but with people who had worked with them and their first manager. And it was pretty amazing. So once I talked to George Harrison, no doubt that made it cooler for me to meet up with Paul McCartney. And then when that was done, no doubt that helped in getting us the ability to do the John Lennon interview. And the reason that I was able to do the George Martin interview was because by that time I'd interviewed so many authors of books, especially memoir writers and ones that I absolutely loved, that the book company knew that I'd be great and do something wonderful with it, which I did. I turned it into a several part radio show that I used in my newscasts, and it was wonderful.
Pull back a little bit and talk about the meeting with Paul and Linda McCartney. How did that even come about? Talk about the meeting. I felt like I was in the room with all of you. And I loved that you got to share a doobie, as we used to call it, with them, getting high.
Well, what happened is I was actually in Seattle at the time. I was a newscaster. It was before I came back to KFRC because I'd been told that I needed to get experience on the air at other stations first before being hired to do news there. And I thought, okay. And I was really liking Seattle. And then I had a relationship that ended kind of badly. And so then I wasn't liking it so much anymore. And I was thinking, maybe it's time to tell KFRC, it's time for them to put me on the air. And so I was just about to, and then out of the blue, I got a call from Dave Sholin, who was the music director. And he said, Lori, what do you think? Will you be able to come to London with me and Ron Hummel, who was our engineer producer, and we'll interview Paul and Linda and their Wings lineup? And I said, absolutely, I'll be home tomorrow. And even though I was actually 2 days later to be back, I was given the date and started prepping for it and everything. And it was very exciting because I'd never been to England before. So not only was I going to London for the very first time, but to meet up with Paul McCartney was just so thrilling, you know, because he was still the cute Beatle to me in a way. So it was great.
And you had seen them live, is that correct, when you were a kid or a teenager?
I saw the Beatles when I was in elementary school. It was a birthday party for a friend of mine. Her mother had bought like a handful of Beatles tickets to Dodger Stadium, which turned out to be their last live show, especially in LA. And it was just amazing that I was invited to go. And even though the audience was full of screaming loud, you know, girls and women and everybody on their feet, so you could barely hear or see the band, and we were way up at the top of Dodger Stadium, it was still so thrilling that it's been with me ever since.
And now you have this opportunity to go interview, as you called him, the cute one, the Beatles, go interview he and his wife. So tell us about walking in this moment. What was that like?
It was just amazing. It was meeting up with Paul and Linda. They were just so kind and sweet. And they both started singing to me. Paul first singing, instead of "Hey Paula," he sang "Hey Laura." And then instead of something else, he started singing "Tell Laura I Love Her," which I thought was so cool, having Paul McCartney and Linda sing to me. It was just amazing. And we had brought for Paul a giant bottle of his favorite booze, and he was thrilled. So he got even more excited while we were talking, and he was just so humorous. Everything he said was a funny answer. You know, he was just great. For example, when I was asking him how it was to be married and be raising all their children together, how he managed to do it, and he just came up with a really funny answer and kept repeating it over and over throughout the interview. So
what did he keep repeating?
Well, I don't even want to say it because it's so silly. It just makes more sense in the book. But he actually named a glue and said that was the way he was able to do it. And it was just funny. And Linda laughed too. And they were hysterical. And the band itself was fun to meet up with, including Denny Lane, who sadly has passed away now, and the two new members, Lawrence Juber and Steve Holly, and it was great to meet up with them, and then meet up with them again, Lawrence anyway, at the recent Beatles Fest for fans that I was at in New York. So it's all paid off, and it's been so many years. It was really cool.
Well, in your book, the details are just hilarious and insightful, but also so, so very touching. So another reason to get your book. But you said that Linda McCartney referred to you as Lori in LA, and that's how she signed some of her book to you?
Absolutely. She, you know, being an American, of course, was just really thrilled that I was Lori and a Los Angeles native, and brought that up several times. She was great. I really enjoyed meeting her and wished we had been friends afterwards, and I was so sorry to hear when she passed away. And he just, you know, Paul McCartney just was funny all the way through. And like I said, he kept saying, you know, when I would ask him a question, why this, why that, he would say, super glue. and it made me laugh a lot. And another thing that really kind of excited me was looking over and all of a sudden seeing Linda holding a shoebox that was filled with pot and starting to roll joints. And it was like, wow. And then they were lighting them up and not just passing them on to members of their band to smoke, but to the three of us from RKO, me and Dave and Ron. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm smoking pot with a Beatle with Paul McCartney. This is just unbelievable. And I thought to myself, gee, do you think I can ask Paul if I can take one of these little joints back so I can keep it the rest of my life as a souvenir? But I didn't. I was a little too embarrassed to do that.
But, I'm curious, and I don't know what I would have done. Did you hesitate to smoke versus like an unprofessionalism? Was that, I don't know, in the moment, of course, it seemed perfectly normal.
Not in the least. Because all the way through working at KFRC, I'd done drugs, and not just marijuana, but speed, because I had to stay up all night to work on the Beatles special after working all day in the newsroom as news editor. So, you know, literally I'd be up 20 hours or more of the day. And so I had to take a lot of speed. And the thing that really encouraged me to do this actually was John Lennon, because in his original 60s interview that we used in the Beatles special that I wrote, he talked about being in Germany and playing at the club there. And it was such a long show that all the guys in the band had to take speed also, you know, and so that encouraged me. Well, if that's what you got to do to get your work done, I got to do it. And so I did.
I love that. Just on an aside, and I shared the story with Madeline Beccaro, talking about her biography, Yoko Ono biography. My father owned a record label at the time in the late 60s called Tetragrammaton Records, and it signed people like Deep Purple, and at the time he was managing Bill Cosby. But my mom and dad flew to Heathrow during the making of the White Album, and before my dad and John and Yoko met to see if they would sign to Tetragrammaton for their Two Virgins album, they all decided to sit around in a circle, cross-legged, in Apple Studios, getting high. And there was my mom, who grew up, you know, was in the biz, knew all these people. And she said, I will never forget the moment of smoking a doobie and having John Lennon pass it to me so that our fingers touched. And I thought, I'm about to smoke a doobie that John Lennon just handed me. And I feel like, in a way, that was your Paul McCartney moment of, I'm getting high with a Beatle.
Absolutely. All I could think about was, oh my God, this joint has been in Paul's lips. And it was incredible, because of course, throughout the whole interview, all I could think of was, wow, Paul McCartney, it would be so cool to be able to hug him at the end of the interview. Not only was I able to, he kissed me. He held me like we were doing a dance, and pushed me down and gave me a big kiss and held me and Linda for a picture. And oh, it was just wonderful.
Well, and that makes me think, first of all, your long legs have come in handy, my friend, because that's just like Dana seeing your legs and you win a Dick Clark contest. And now you're being dipped by Sir Paul McCartney, although he wasn't Sir then. But that is just phenomenal. And so you've had this incredible time with them, almost like hanging out with friends. I don't even want to say almost. You walk away with this incredible interview, and you then interview George Martin, which goes so well. And we're leading up now to December 8th. So how does that come about that you even get the choice, option, offer to go to the Dakota to interview John Lennon and Yoko Ono after 5 years of him not being in the limelight?
Well, not being in the limelight, he hadn't made any music. And he and Yoko were just about to release Double Fantasy, and they didn't want to do a lot of interviews to promote it necessarily. And so they made, I believe it was one British radio interview, which actually took place 2 days before John was shot and killed. And he decided that he was going to make just one United States radio interview once the album was released. I believe he did one before it was released, a short one. But not only was Dave Sholin an intense RKO executive by that time, as well as music director, but also the fact that we'd been to London to interview Paul and Linda and Wings, and I'd interview George Harrison, and we'd all produced the Beatles special. So I think we had a lot of credit that made it just seem really good for us to do that to their record company, which was Warner Brothers Geffen Records, and our Warner's Geffen exec, Bert Keane, who ended up coming to the interview with us, was very excited to have us do it. And he made a point of saying right off the bat, long before the interview started, make sure you do not ask about the Beatles. You do not talk about John's past at all. This is just about what's happening now and going forward. And as much as that disappointed us, we of course said, no worries, we will. And the cool thing was that during the interview, it was John that brought it up. And the amazing thing about the interview with John was not just being able to sit next to him on a love seat and thinking, oh my God, John Lennon, my idol, but also the fact that he was so incredibly validating and complimentary about every question I asked and comment I made. And he would look at me and he would say, yes, love, or exactly, or oh, yes. And it just made me feel so thrilled. And he would look at me, he would push his glasses down his nose and look at me with his big eyes overwards and smile. And I would think, oh my God, I've just made a friend for life. And I really felt like we had so many things in common that it was true that he and Yoko and I were going to be friends for the rest of our lives. And sadly, of course, that wasn't able to happen.
Well, I want to talk about this on the next episode. I want to give you the next episode to talk about this interview. I also want to talk to you about what you've gone through with it. But for now, please let our listeners know where they can find your book, where they can learn more about you, where they can hear these interviews. Most of these interviews are on tape. They're recorded and you have utilized these. So tell us about that.
Well, the best way to find out about me is definitely to read my book, but also to go to the book's website, because there's bios and things like that. And the website is confessionsofarockandrollnamedropper.com. And also on the website is a section called Purchase that has links to where you can get the book. For example, Amazon and my publisher's website and Barnes and Noble and Goodreads.com. And you can get it at so many other places, including Target.com. And you can go to bookstores and get it as well. And this isn't just in America, but all over the place, thank God. And one of the other amazing things is that I've recently released and self-voiced my audiobook, which was produced and turned out, I think, pretty well, and is also available on Amazon and also audible.com, and not only features me and my voice, but also actual quotes from the interview, that all the bites that are featured in the paperback book, a lot of them are actual quotes in the audiobook from everyone, from John Lennon to the Ramones. It's amazing.
That really is amazing. I just think it's incredible. And I really look forward to speaking with you on the next episode. So until then,